Today's broadcast is brought to you in part by Corporate Capital Direct. Listen, banks are not lending, and the online lenders may not tell you all you need to hear to make the right decision for your company needs. Get the inside edge for business financing. Whether you have capital needs for inventory, payroll, general operating expenses, or even to consolidate expensive debt or tax issues, Corporate Capital Direct can help you avoid common mistakes when seeking a capital solution for your business. Never upfront fees. Get the inside edge for your business financing needs. Call Corporate Capital Direct at 800-261-6478 or go to corpcapdirect.com. Again, call Corporate Capital Direct at 800-261-6478 or go to corpcapdirect.com.
Welcome to Legal News and Review, recipient of the Florida Bar Award of Excellence, and featuring Michael Santucci, co-chair of the Intellectual Property Division of the Broward Bar. From the law firm of Santucci Priori, practicing intellectual property, business, and entertainment law and litigation, located in downtown Fort Lauderdale. Legal News and Review, the only real problem solver radio program using the law, with your moderator, Philip Bell, and hosts and legal panel attorney, Gary Singer, chair of the Broward County Bar Association's Real Property Section. Gary Singer is board certified in real estate law and a syndicated columnist from the Sun Sentinel. He is an expert in his field of practice. Now, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
On the docket for today's broadcast, employers doing business in Florida should be aware of their potential exposure. Nearly one-third of all federal wage and hour suits filed each year are filed in Florida. It is vital that employers ensure that their pay practices meet both state and federal requirements. Being proactive saves business money. Today, addressing employment in the state of Florida, as well as federal requirements, is Susan Eisenberg, who is board certified in labor and employment, and that makes her an expert. Attorney Susan Eisenberg is from the law firm of Cozen O'Connor, who is a full-service international law firm. Cozen O'Connor is ranked among the top 100 law firms in the country with more than 600 attorneys in 24 cities across two continents. Susan represents employers, from large businesses with thousands of employees to small businesses with just a few. I first like to welcome and introduce our legal panel host. Good afternoon, Gary Ostro.
Wow, I get to go first? What's the occasion? I'm not used to it. Thanks, Phil. Good to be here.
Great to see you. And good afternoon, Michael Santucci.
How are you, Phil? I just want to remind everybody to please keep submitting your music to our show to info@500law.com. That's info@500law.com. If you're a Florida music artist or songwriter, we'll get your songs on our show.
Absolutely. And Gary Singer will be back next week. He's taking some continuing education credits to better serve his clients. Besides, it's a bar requirement.
So he
yeah,
says
that was a nice way to put it. I liked his email on that one.
It was.
I'm going to steal that.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Well, you're intellectual property. Be careful.
I can do it legally.
There you go. Susan Eisenberg from Cozen O'Connor, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Well, it's another day in paradise, isn't it?
It sure is.
It is a hot one outside. But, Susan, a landmark appeals court ruling extends Title VII protections to the LGBT employees. On April 4th, 2017, the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals became the first federal court of appeals in the nation to rule that sexual orientation claims are actionable under Title VII. What does this mean?
Well, for some jurisdictions, it's going to mean a lot. For some, it won't mean too much because there are many, many state and local laws already that protect LGBT employees. But the Seventh Circuit, in an en banc decision, which means it was the full Seventh Circuit, became the first circuit to actually rule that sexual orientation is a covered, protected characteristic under Title VII, when previously the Seventh Circuit had ruled that it was not covered. There are a number of other circuit courts that have ruled that that sexual orientation is not covered under Title VII. So now that we have a split decision between the circuits, it really is ripe to go up to the Supreme Court for a definitive determination as to whether Title VII does cover sexual orientation as a protected characteristic.
Susan, this is Michael Santucci. What are the circuits and what are the positions that each of the circuits are taking? Just so we're clear on that.
Well, each circuit so far that has ruled that sexual orientation is not covered under Title VII in and of itself. But there is a caveat there. There was a Supreme Court decision that had come out a number of years ago that had actually created a cause of action for gender stereotyping. So, in other words, if you are a woman and you dress and you behave like a man and you're discriminated against because of it, that was a carve-out. So a lot of the employees were able to sue under Title VII for sexual orientation by claiming gender stereotyping. The 11th Circuit, the 2nd Circuit, had both previously ruled that sexual orientation is not covered under Title VII. The 2nd Circuit just recently agreed to hear that issue en banc and may actually overturn its previous precedent on that area. The 11th Circuit case recently had ruled again that sexual orientation is not covered under Title VII, but in the same case did say that the plaintiff could state a claim for gender stereotyping. My understanding is the defendant in that case has not requested an en banc decision, so that decision should stand.
And for our lay listeners, the Second Circuit covers New York and also Connecticut.
Connecticut.
Yes.
And one other state, which I'm drawing a blank on right now.
Could it be New England, Massachusetts, or
Massachusetts is First Circuit.
Pennsylvania. It's not Pennsylvania.
No, that's
New York,
not,
New Jersey,
it's not New Jersey. Right. Jersey's third.
I'm guessing.
Jersey's
Ohio?
Third.
Yes.
No, sixth.
Okay.
Anyway,
I was testing you. I knew that.
But,
right.
It's New York.
It's New York. Yeah, it is New York. So,
Susan, I have a question.
Yep.
In Phil's introduction, he pointed out that a lot of the wage and hour claims, not surprisingly, come out of Florida. What is it about Florida that makes us so special, besides so many other statistics?
Right, exactly. Well, it's interesting, and one of the reasons why Florida is so high in the sheer number of filings is, first of all, we have a lot of companies that are, I don't want to say mom and pop, but they are growing into themselves, and they don't really understand or necessarily realize what they have to follow in terms of the law. So we call it low-hanging fruit. And we have a very active plaintiff's bar. So they go after these claims because, A, they're easy to prove, because there usually is a violation of some sort, even if it's technical, and B, they get their attorney's fees paid.
But that's true in any state. Why, if you have the answer, and I am trying to give you a hard time. but why Florida? Why is Florida so litigious and everything happens in Florida? All the craziness is out of Florida legally.
Well, in terms of the wage and hour claims, it is a very active plaintiff's bar. And we call it quantity over quality. There are slam, bam, thank you, ma'am, a lot of them cases. You know, they come in, they settle very quickly. You don't get the very sophisticated issues or the big class and collective actions in Florida. But sheer numbers, in fact, the judges have created their own system for handling them because there's so many of them.
Well, last year they were going to make a change to overtime and how it's calculated. And just before the 12th hour, December 1st, was supposed to take place of last year, 2016, a federal court put a stay on it.
Correct.
But it did some good from one aspect where businesses had audits done.
Correct.
And I find it, as a businessman, to be proactive than retroactive always saves me money.
Right.
As well. And so in my mind, it behooves all employers to do at least a yearly audit to see where they are.
Are you kidding me? I'd be really happy if they did an audit every 5 years. But it really is, the statute we're talking about is called the Fair Labor Standards Act. It is a gotcha statute. You know, it has so many, you know, cross the T's, dot the I's, and if you don't, there's exposure. And audits should be done. And the last time these regulations were changed was in 2004. We saw a huge uptick in the number of audits that we did. We got clients and employers in compliance, and everybody went back to sleep until 2015, 2016, when they started doing the audits again. And then, of course, there was the district court in Texas that stayed the regulations, and that's now on appeal. Now, whether or not the Department of Labor is going to continue with that appeal remains to be seen. They've asked for now another extension of time while the administration determines whether or not they want to continue with the appeal, and Acosta is going to have to decide what the, you know, what they want to do with that.
Are these by necessity jury or non-jury trials typically, or is that a matter of choice?
Boy, they are entitled to a jury trial.
They being the plaintiff.
The plaintiff is entitled to a jury trial, which is a nightmare. Have you ever tried to explain to a jury wage and hour regulations and keep them awake?
Well, it's like a medical malpractice case. They don't understand the medical aspects of a malpractice case. They act like they do, but I think when a push comes to shove, they really don't understand the medical the deep medical aspects of it.
Yeah, I also think though the medical, when you talk about medical arena, it's juicy, it's sexy. But you know, you talk about, you know, where you paid $7.25 or $7.55 an hour, you know, everybody's tuning out. So
do the plaintiffs opt for jury? And do
they all opt for jury? They all opt for jury,
and they get it.
Oh no! By statute, you got it.
Fees. Okay, yeah.
Absolutely.
There
yeah,
because they have statutory fees.
They have and they have statutory fees.
And
so
then
it
that's
is,
more leverage for the defendant, for you know, leverage for the plaintiff to force the defendant to settle.
Right. So.
But don't a lot of them do settle before they go to trial?
Most of them settle, and most of them settle because one of two reasons: either there's a violation, and the only thing as you litigate that increases is your defense costs and the plaintiff's fees. Or B, the numbers are so small in terms of damages, especially on single plaintiff cases, it's not worth going to court for it.
But the fees can often exceed the damages.
Oh, sure. Most of
probably,
the time.
Probably
and that's
virtually
the big danger to businesses of not
that's
settling.
That's right. That's absolutely correct. Unless you're talking about a big class action where you're talking millions upon millions of dollars in a national class action, it's going to be almost always cheaper to settle than
so
to
Susan,
fight it.
Isn't the right answer then to prevent the problem before
Absolutely.
It happens, or to at least mitigate the number of these claims you're going to have by
Absolutely.
Businesses employing the right types of practices and policies in place?
Well, and that really is true. And sometimes they have the best intentions. And I always say, I don't know any employer that intentionally violates
sure.
these
right.
laws. It's a mistake, and it's a mistake that could easily have been corrected.
When you say these laws, can you specify what's the most litigious area? Would it be overtime or
yeah.
failure to pay overtime
there's
claims?
There's two areas. One is what they call misclassification. So you classify people or positions as exempt from overtime when they're not entitled to it.
That's the most litigious?
I think that's I think it's neck and neck. That and off-the-clock claims, you know.
What is that?
And that's off-the-clock claims means, you know what, I punched out, I continued to work, or I did work at home. And it's very difficult now because a lot of employees, hourly employees, have access on their computers, their cell phones. Their bosses are text messaging them. That's all work time that should be recorded. And if it's not, they have an off-the-clock claim. So,
which could include an overtime, would be part and parcel
right.
of an overtime claim.
Either straight time or overtime. Or now the employers have employees who keep track of time on their computers. But what happens to the time while they're booting up their computers?
Right.
It's
lost
time.
All payable,
time.
Right.
It's all payable.
Yes.
So the off-the-clock claims, it is much harder to get summary judgment on the off-the-clock claims. So we're seeing a lot of an uptick in those as well.
So businesses should buy computers that boot up very fast.
Right.
But or always boot it up.
Yeah. Or another thing is you can always add, you know, some add 10 minutes to the person, to the employee's time to account for boot up time. And that's always helpful.
Florida is an at-will state. And we're going to be discussing after our break regarding what actually that means and how is a small business can protect themselves. Because typically it's my understanding from friends of mine who have businesses who have been caught up into this, small businesses, that when they let people go, all of a sudden the overtime becomes an issue. You're listening to Legal News and Review. And we're speaking to board-certified attorney, and that makes her an expert in employment and labor law, Susan Eisenberg from Cozen O'Connor. We're going to be coming right back.
Today's broadcast is brought to you in part by Corporate Capital Direct. Listen. Banks are not lending, and the online lenders may not tell you all you need to hear to make the right decision for your company needs. Get the inside edge for business financing. Whether you have capital needs for inventory, payroll, general operating expenses, or even to consolidate expensive debt or tax issues, Corporate Capital Direct can help you avoid common mistakes when seeking a capital solution for your business. Never upfront fees. Get the inside edge for your business financing needs. Call Corporate Capital Direct at 800-261-6478 or go to corpcapdirect.com. Again, call Corporate Capital Direct at 800-261-6478 or go to corpcapdirect.com.
Welcome back to Legal News and Review. Recipient of the Award of Excellence from the Florida Bar, featuring Michael Santucci of the law firm Santucci Priori, practicing intellectual property, business, and entertainment law and litigation, located in downtown Fort Lauderdale. Reach them at 500law.com or 954-351-7474. To contact the legal panel hosts and guests, go online to belegalbuzz.com. Once again, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
Legal News and Review is back on the air. My name is Philip Bell. I am the moderator for today's broadcast. And we left off before the break regarding at will. And Florida is an at-will state. And listen, if you've been around for generations or you're a new company, this is information you really do need to understand. It'll help protect you. Again, being proactive saves you money. Retroactive could put you out of business. Susan, what is at-will? What does that mean?
At-will basically means that you serve at the will of the employer. And everybody is at-will in Florida unless you have an employment contract for a specific duration. If you don't have an employment agreement with a specific duration, you're at will. It means you can be terminated anytime with or without notice for any reason or no reason, as long as it's not a discriminatory reason. So what we have found in Florida is that employers get very confident that they can just willy-nilly fire people. But the discriminatory reason oftentimes rears its head because everybody is in one or more protected classes. And nobody ever thinks they're getting fired because they're not performing. They think they're getting fired because they're in a protected class. So they go to a lawyer and they say, I was fired because fill in the blank. I'm white, I'm black, I'm Hispanic, I'm male, I'm female. And then the plaintiff's lawyer asks the very important question. Let's talk about how you were paid. Oh. And that's how the wage and hour claims come up. Because what
incidental.
At intake, because it's easier to prove those, and they know that it's much more difficult to show the discrimination type claims. So employers, it would really behoove them, when you do a termination, don't assume you're always right. Have proper documentation. Go through the steps to make the claim defensible. Because I always say, you can't stop people from bringing a claim, but you can make it defensible.
Does an employer have to provide a reason to somebody who's terminated?
No.
They don't have to give you any reason. You're fired. You've been working there for 20 years. You're done. You're out. Goodbye.
No, they don't have to by law. But then if you're the 20-year employee, you're just going to assume there was some bad reason, and you're going to go see a lawyer, and the lawyer's going to say, why were you fired? You're going to say, I wasn't given a reason. The lawyer's going to assume it was an illegal reason, and then the employer's going to get a demand letter, and they're going to have to give the reason at some point.
Well, in the news has been harassment issues from Fox, my God, K Jewelers, Uber. I mean, things seem to come in three, bad news, you know. But it could have all been prevented, right?
It should have all been prevented.
But is it common to have those egregious issues? I mean, the harassment is quite blatant, and when there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah. I mean, I would hope not. Look, it has been the law since, you know, everybody's been aware since Clarence Thomas was confirmed as a Supreme Court justice that sexual harassment claims are viable claims.
Right.
And also in the late 1990s, when the Supreme Court ruled on Farragher and Ellerth, it gave employers an affirmative defense. What you have to do is put a policy out preventing it. You have to train your employees, and you have to investigate claims. You've got to create an atmosphere where employees are willing to come forward and report it before it rises to the level of Fox. That situation should have never gotten to that, you know, that level. And what happens when it gets to that level is you're not talking about small chump change. You're talking about millions of dollars in settlements.
Right. Now, to have a corporate handbook these days, I think is very important. It sets a standard in practice.
It is.
Unfortunately, a lot of employees don't read it. They're just happy they have the job, and they sign it, and off they go. In reviewing those, how vital is it to update it and make the changes? Because it seems like the laws constantly change every year.
It's extraordinarily vital. In the past couple of years, we've seen many changes, particularly by the National Labor under the National Labor Relations Act. Issues like social media, issues like what you can fire people for complaining about terms and conditions of employment. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission has been very big on things like background checks, and they're very much against background checks. So there are things that employers are doing that, you know, nobody looked twice at 5-10 years ago,
right,
that are now being called into question.
Well, background checks, my goodness, even credit checks, and other things, and social media that could be available could cause issues for the employed. But within the issues right now, within the state of Florida, we're my business is a drug-free business. You know, although Mike keeps wanting to charge me, it's drug-free. I couldn't resist, Mike. But marijuana, medical marijuana right now, is law of the land here in the state of Florida. Not federally, but here in the state of Florida.
Correct.
How can employers enforce that?
Well, it is a little bit difficult, but not a lot difficult. And we've got a lot of guidance if we look at what's happened in the state of Colorado, where they have even a more lenient marijuana law, where it's recreational, not just medical. Now, remember, in Florida, what passed was very limited use of marijuana for medical reasons, but it still is illegal under the federal law. So what you saw happen in Colorado was employers who did drug testing and employees tested positive for marijuana fired them. They, you know, the employees filed suit, but the firing was upheld because it was still illegal under federal law. You don't have to allow employees to, you know, to violate federal law. But the one issue is, the problem with marijuana is marijuana and its metabolites stay in the system for a very long time. So it may not be current use. It may have been former use, and you may be throwing out the baby with the bathwater. In other words, you've got a very good employee who maybe smoked 2 weeks ago when they were out on vacation, and they come back, and they're subject to a random drug test, and they test positive. They're not impaired in any way. Now, in employment, you really have to treat everybody consistently. So are you willing to throw that person out in order to, you know, be able to have a policy, a drug-free workplace?
Now, you travel throughout the entire country. As a matter of fact, you in March, you had a very successful, seminar as well. And you have one coming up, and that's June 14th. And that's actually going to be in Philadelphia.
Correct.
As well. And that's open to all employers.
Well, it is open to all employers, and anybody who is interested in registering should can just get in touch with me, and we can get them an invite.
Right, and you're going to have the latest developments under the new Trump administration.
Correct.
Which is business-friendly, less regulation, supposedly. We're going to see what's going to happen.
It's not moving quite fast enough for a lot of employers, though.
Yeah, I would agree. For those people that want to get in touch with you, and again, you're with the firm of Cozen and Connor, and I want to emphasize the aspect of you being board certified, because there's maybe 4 or 5% of all attorneys in the state of Florida that have that designation, and that allows me to call you an expert. Susan Eisenberg, what is the best way to contact you?
Well, you can always go to our website, which is Cozen.com. I'm at seisenberg@cozen.com, and my direct line is 305-704-5941.
And if they Google Cozen, that's C-O-Z-E-N, then O'Connor, you come up quite readily, especially if you add Miami.
There you go. Absolutely. Yeah, I think you only have to go as far as Cozen.
That's true. That's true. You know, Susan, you have a dynamic practice. When I grow up, I want to be you because you get to travel all over the place. You know, you have employers all around the country.
Yes, we do.
And we thank you for coming on and taking part of the program and educating us. And again, whether you've been around for generations or you're a new company, it's so vital to make sure that you're proactive. You that's your mantra with your clients.
Absolutely.
And you protect your clients because either they spend a little money now or they're going to spend a lot later.
A lot more later.
Well, I want to thank my co-host Phil Bell today, thank super criminal lawyer Gary Ostro, and our special guest Susan Eisenberg tonight. And listen to us. We're on two AM stations, one FM station. We're on the iHeartMedia app. And please put down your phones if you're in the car. And remember,
be legal.
You've been listening to the award-winning Legal News and Review, recognized by the Florida Bar's Award of Excellence. Legal News and Review, featuring Michael Santucci from the law firm of Santucci Priori, located in downtown Fort Lauderdale, and practicing intellectual property, business, and entertainment law and litigation. They can be reached at 500law.com or at 954-351-7474. To contact the legal panel hosts and guests, go to belegalbuzz.com. And to reach Gary Singer, board-certified real estate and syndicated columnist, appearing in 400 media outlets, including the front page of the Money Section every Monday in the Sun Sentinel, from the law firm of Gary M. Singer, PA, call 954-851-1448 for Legal News and Review. Remember, be legal.